Our final case this morning is number 22-1878, Estellas U.S. LLC v. Hospira, Inc. Mr. Hughes?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court, Paul Hughes for appellants. Four principal factors taken together establish that the District Court abuses discretion in striking appellants' infringement evidence. First, there was a baldly asymmetrical process. Hospira was allowed to amend its ANDA at the 11th hour for the stated purpose of defeating appellants' infringement claim contentions, but appellants were not able to meaningfully respond. Second, the court reopened discovery to allow for supplemental infringement contentions, and appellants fully complied with the schedule.
Okay, I'm trying to understand the scope of that order. So help me with the chronology here. If I understand it, Apotex was the first generic to suggest that it was going to amend its ANDA. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And when that happened, there was a hearing before the district court in April of 2021, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And at that hearing, your client objected to the amendment, and it was disclosed that other generics, including Hospira, intended to amend their ANDAs. And as I understand it, your client suggested that there be a stipulation among the parties as to the scope of supplemental discovery. Is that fair?
Well, Your Honor, I think talking about that April 7th, 2021 hearing is important because my friends...
No, you're not answering my question. Just answer my question.
Your Honor, I think what the parties said at that hearing repeatedly was they needed discovery because they didn't want to be blindsided about what was going to be in the ANDA amendment.
Okay, and there was a suggestion that there would be a stipulation for supplemental discovery, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And your client and Apotex entered into such a stipulation, correct?
Well, Your Honor, the ultimate order that was entered at appendix page 20...
No, please answer my question. Your client and Apotex entered into a stipulation, right?
Your Honor, I don't think that's quite correct. What ultimately occurred was the order that was issued at 2020 to 2021 that was the result of the parties working together.
I'm not asking what happened later. My first thing is that there was a stipulation between your client and Apotex, right?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, but that ultimately resulted in the key order reopening discovery at 2020 to 2021.
My problem with your argument that the order here goes beyond the end amendment is that in that very stipulation, and this is dated April 28, 2021. It's not in the joint appendix. It's under the heading Scope of Discovery, it says, on April 14, 2021, plaintiffs, that's your client, proposed that the, quote, scope of the supplemental discovery, close quote, would be the, quote, DMF and amendments, close quote. A week later, Apotex agreed. Are you suggesting that somehow the later stipulations with respect to the other generics had a broader purpose than the Apotex stipulation?
Well, a few things about that, Your Honor. First, I think about the Apotex stipulation. That's at docket 715. The parties make clear that to the extent they're talking about a limited scope of discovery, it is about evidentiary discovery that they're addressing. There is never an agreement with Hospira that there is going to be a limitation
I'm trying to understand whether the district court was right in interpreting the scope of this order. And here we have a stipulation that with respect to the first generic, Apotex, that there's limited scope to the discovery, and it's going to be limited to the ANDA amendments and the DMF amendment.
And
I'm asking you a simple question. Given that the scope of discovery, by specific agreement of the parties, was limited to those purposes for purposes of Apotex, what is there to suggest that the stipulation for discovery as to the other defendants would be different.
Well, Your Honor, a few things. First, I don't agree that that is a limited on the stipulation of the discovery. But second, even if we assume that, I don't think that changes my argument in any material way, because this was a supplemental infringement contention that was necessitated by the ANDA and the DMF. What is the ultimate nature of the case here was they amended the ANDA for the express stated purpose of gutting the underlying infringement claims. This was a direct response to that.
I'm sorry, I don't think you're answering my question. We have a stipulation between your client and Apotex which says the supplemental discovery is limited to the ANDA amendments and the DMF amendments. Scope of discovery, limited to that. I'm saying, what is there about the later stipulation that suggests that it had a broader purpose?
So if you look at the text of this, and that's appendix page 2020 to 2021, it says there's nothing about limiting the scope of it. It says, in fact, that there's the allowance for supplemental infringement contentions. And we think that allowance for supplemental infringement contentions, again, as entered by Judge Connolly, not by Judge Burke, is clear on its face that it allows the parties to change their infringement contentions in view of the fact that the ANDA was forthcoming. And again, when that stipulation was reached, the parties...
Follow up on Judge Dyke's line of questioning. Can we turn to appendix 712 to 713? And this appears to be plaintiff's letter to the Honorable Christopher Burke in opposition to defendant and Hospira's motion to strike. So if I'm not mistaken, this would have been on behalf of your client that this letter got sent. Is this accurate?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So now if we look at top of 712, it talks about the court agreed and entered a supplemental discovery schedule concerning the plan DMF and ANDA amendments. Do you see that at the top of 712?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then let's go to appendix page 713. So in that first full paragraph at the end of that, it talks about plaintiff's contentions and expert opinion related to defendants and amendments, the focus of the supplemental discovery agreed to by the parties and ordered by the court. So my reading, at least, of this part of appendix page 713 seems to honestly kind of align with Judge Dyke's points that he was making with respect to Apotex, but this seems very specific also to Hospira and limits the scope of supplemental discovery.
Your Honor, I think, this goes to our central point. In saying that it's limited to the ANDA amendments, it's true that the ANDA amendments had the effect of taking water out of one part of the process. But our whole point was, in order to respond to that, we found a different part of the process that had water. So I don't think there's anything that suggests that this is a facial limitation saying that the scope of the discovery period was any more limited than what the court said at the top of 2020. And what the same letter says at Appendix 710 is that this is all necessitated, this is in that first full paragraph, quote, after the original close of fact discovery, expert discovery, and shortly before trial, defendants announced plans to amend key product release specifications, the DMF, and their ANDA specification that are central to the infringement issues in this case, and asked the court to move the trial date to allow them to do so. In response to the request, the court delayed trial, reopened discovery, and defendant produced those amendments in a new sample for testing. This is showing that was completely consistent with what my clients understood the court to have done, which was to say, we're going to move trial and we're going to reopen in light of these amendments.
Okay, let's assume, unless Judge Cunningham has further questions, but let's assume for the moment that you're wrong about that and that the scope of discovery was limited to the ANDA amendments. And so under the Pennypack factors, how do you suggest that there was error in the district court's decision to bar the discovery as untimely?
Of course, recognizing we disagree on the timeliness issue, but assuming as the court suggests that we're wrong about that, what ZF Meritor suggests is that the criticality of the evidence is quite essential, and one looks to the broader weighing of the importance of that evidence in the broader facts. And I think there are a few things that are critical here. It is defendants who said that these were very significant amendments that were done for the purpose of gutting the existing infringement contentions. And here's what Hospira said at the closing of the trial. This is a trial transcript 787 to 788, docket 978. They said, quote, "These aren't tiny changes. These are big changes for the precise purpose of addressing the issue that we've been talking about in this case." They're saying these are big, significant changes.
The other theory that you're now presenting.
Sorry.
If they didn't, the amendments, the AND amendments, did not impact the theory that you are now arguing about.
But that takes us, again, to our central contention in this case, Your Honor.
Is that correct?
Right, which is to say, if what occurred here, which is after plaintiffs were locked in with their theory that occurred in November, it took Hospira 9 months until August 24th of 2021 to propose their amendments. So they waited to the 11th hour to put those amendments in. They did so, as I just quoted, for the precise purpose of gutting the existing infringement contention. If that is permissible without a plaintiff being able to amend its theory in response, no one can ever limit or narrow their infringement contentions again for fear of the same sort of trap being sprung. And I don't think...
Why didn't you include this new theory in your original infringement contentions at the earlier part of the litigation?
We chose a theory, Your Honor, that Judge Connolly himself recognized Hospira had substantial reason to be concerned about. That's at his decision appendix 188 to 189 based on their documents. And it also was applicable to multiple defendants because it was at the API supplier rather than downstream. And we knew that we were going to have a limited time to put on our case. Judge Connolly gave us 11 hours inclusive of opening and closing. That was 10 hours, not just to prove infringement, but also address invalidity, obviousness, anticipation. We knew we were short.
Like typically in litigation, right, you're going to preserve all the theories and then you narrow your case as you get closer to trial. Can you just give me a sense of why that wasn't the approach that was utilized?
We knew that based on what was going to occur with Judge Connolly, we were going to have to limit. We were doing the responsible thing at the outset of limiting the case. And again, Your Honor, I think courts appropriately in complex ANDA cases encourage, if not require, parties to limit. If the result is that what Hospira did is appropriate, no one can limit again.
You weren't required to limit your infringement contentions to the theory that you did present. You could have included in the infringement contentions the broader theory, so the two theories.
Well, Your Honor, and that's the rule that we don't think this court should endorse, is to tell parties that they've got to belt and suspenders everything up in the event that an ANDA defendant late in the case makes an amendment to gut the infringement contention that's been presented. Because if that's the rule, there's no end to that, which means all of not just additional contentions, but additional claims are going to have to be brought with all of the resulting invalidity contentions and work for the parties and the courts. It's going to lead to a rule that massively, exponentially increases the amount of work that goes into these cases if a late ANDA amendment is allowed. And you know, as the court said in Faring, these ANDA amendments are quite important because they restrict what it is that the party is allowed to sell by the FDA, and because they restrict what it is the party is allowed to say, it gives the defendant quite a bit of power to be able to push through a latent litigation and an amendment to gut the existing infringement contentions.
You were permitted to update your infringement case to account for that amendment by updating your old theory with new testing, correct?
But, Your Honor, what they...
Is that right?
But, Your Honor, I think that's it's correct, but I don't think relevant, and it's not relevant for the reason that the whole purpose of what they amended, as they admitted, as I read earlier, and they said in their briefs, was to gut our existing theory. And so they were successful at doing that. And so I don't think it's right to say, well, you could have amended in that theory that was gutted by the fact of the amendment when we had another very valid theory that was present, and they had more than sufficient time to be able to address this. Dr. Steed's testimony said that it would take weeks, not months, to run that new testing. And again, this is critical because we only had 5 weeks and 3 days from when they amended their ANDA to when our contentions were due. They then had 6 weeks in order to turn around their expert report. And I appreciate those are tight timelines, but those tight timelines existed because of the fact that Hospira chose to amend its product, and not just chose to amend, but very late. Again, our original infringement contentions were filed in November 2020. It took them 9 months to make this amendment and 4.5 months to even tell the court that they're intending to do so. So these changes were occasioned by their very late-in-the-day changes.
If we conclude there's no abuse of discretion, do you agree that we do not need to reach the harmless error analysis?
That would come if the court agrees that there is abuse of discretion, Your Honor. So I agree, but we think this is a prototypical case for abuse of discretion. Reserve my time.
Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Mr. Klein.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Charles Klein for Hospira. Counsel made a critical concession. He said, we chose a theory. In fact, there were 4 choices that plaintiffs made in this case that led directly to Judge Burke's exercise of his wide discretion to strike the theory. The first choice they made, as Judge Cunningham mentioned, was at the outset. They knew throughout this case, they've known that Hospira takes Form G and dissolves it in a water-based solution. They had every incentive to preserve a theory of infringement if they thought that was even a viable theory. Plaintiffs have been represented by 4 large law firms. These are 2 very sophisticated pharmaceutical companies. There was no limitation on their infringement contentions. In fact, their infringement contentions were quite lengthy. Yet they never once said Hospira's compounding process infringed. That was a choice they made. In fact, their expert initially conceded. When we asked him, are you offering this theory? He said no. This was not some kind of simple infringement theory. Their own expert said this was complex based on esoteric science. They made a choice. They didn't assert it. They have to live with that choice. Then they made 3 other choices. The first one is in April 2021 when Judge Connolly decided to consider the amended ANDA. At that point in time, they could have said, well, Your Honor, if you consider this amended ANDA, we should have the right to completely revisit our contentions, and we do want the right to argue that Hospira's compounding process infringed. They could have done that in April 2021. It would have given us months to consider appropriate testing, consider the appropriate fact witnesses we would need to bring to trial, discovery. But no, they didn't say that. What they said instead was, we don't think that the amendment should change our evidence or our position, Appendix 1065 to 1066. That was a decision they made. And they didn't preserve any type of fairing argument. Then they made another decision. At some point in time, and we don't know when, they decided that they were going to, as their experts said, go from no opinion to an opinion. We don't know when that happened, but it happened long before they disclosed to us for the first time. They waited as long as possible to tell Hospira that now its own compounding process could be at issue in the case. They waited until the deadline for supplemental contentions to change their contentions. What they should have done, and the choice they made, is that as soon as they thought they would even start considering a theory that Hospira's process infringes, they should have gone to the court and sought leave to amend their contentions.
What's your best citation regarding the scope of supplemental discovery? Do you have like something you can point us to, or
yes,
is the best source?
Yeah, so there are a number of things we can point to. Number one, the discussion of the Apotex case is correct. And supplemental discovery was discussed in connection with the Apotex case and our case at the same time at the April conference. And in DI 709, I don't believe it's in the appendix, the parties agreed. They agree, quote, supplemental discovery will be limited. And Judge Burke relied on that when he said supplemental discovery should be limited not only for Apotex, but for Hospira. It's the same type of issue, and ANDA was amended. The schedule itself, I mean, just reading the schedule, it implies that it's limited because it starts off with the requirement that the ANDA be, the amended ANDA be produced. And then everything after that proceeds. And it's one-sided discovery. It's not open-ended discovery. It's plaintiffs got to take discovery from the defendants, including Hospira. And that was done on purpose. Judge Connolly talked about that. Had discovery been reopened and any contention be amended, we would have had the right to take discovery related to a brand new theory. But the discovery was one way. And then, of course, it talks about supplemental contentions and supplemental expert opinions, implying it's supplementing something that was preserved, not a change, a brand new contention or opinion.
What's your best response to opposing counsel's argument that somehow this is asymmetrical in terms of what was allowed to be done here?
Yeah, I, in fact, I want to talk about that because, number one, they got all the discovery they requested. At the hearing, they said, this is Appendix 1062, this is in April 2021 with Judge Connolly, if the court is willing to entertain testimony and evidence from the defendants about these amendments, then we do feel we would need discovery about them because we would be in an unfair position. They got what they asked for. They asked for discovery about the amendments. Judge Connolly agreed. They got the discovery. They had a new expert opinion related to the ANDA amendments that was presented at trial. And so they got what they asked for. And I do also want to point out, because there was an implication that Hospira made this change. The only reason Hospira amended its ANDA was because it had to, because its independent supplier changed the DMF. Once that happened, we had to amend the ANDA. And all that amended ANDA says, as plaintiffs themselves characterize it, it changes a release specification. It doesn't change the product. It says, after Curia finishes making its product, it has to test it to ensure that plaintiff's patents are being respected. That's all the ANDA amendment does. And so, in addition, the Ferring case contemplate, it says that the statute, the Hatch-Waxman statute, actually contemplates ANDA amendments during litigation. It says, the quote is, the statute contemplates that the ANDA will be amended as a matter of course. And in addition, as counsel conceded, they made their own choices. They made their own choice as to what to ask for when Judge Connolly allowed us to amend the ANDA. They made their choice as to when to disclose their new theory, and they waited to the last possible moment instead of giving us fair notice. And also, when arguing criticality, they made the choice in front of Judge Burke to say they want to proceed with all their original theories and the new theory. They could have said to Judge Burke, this new theory is our real theory. We're going to abandon all the old theories. This theory really is critical to our case. But they decided not to do that. They wanted to have their cake and eat it too. And they held on to their original theories. And there were many theories, by the way. There was an independent theory that the crude intermediate infringed, the Form F intermediate infringed, the API infringed. They had theories of direct infringement, induced infringement, infringement before the ANDA amendment, infringement after the ANDA amendment. They had all these theories that were presented at trial, and they lost them all. This was not some critical theory. It was a backup Hail Mary theory. And Judge Burke called them out on that and said, this is not really a critical theory. If it were, you would have preserved it, and you would have emphasized, you would have gone forward on just this theory if it really were critical. The case they rely on is the ZF Meritor case, which actually says, quote, plaintiff's conscious choice to rely so heavily on data that was ultimately found to be unreliable weighs against a finding of abuse of discretion. And that's the point, that's my theme of the argument, which is they made their choices. They made their choices, they have to live with it. If they can't argue for an abuse of discretion based on the choices that they made. Now, I do want to make two more points in my limited time, really based on arguments they made in their brief. Their theme, especially in their reply brief, was that Hospira changed its product and therefore they have the right to completely change the case. And first of all, there were two products. There's the API product and then there's Hospira's finished product. Neither product changed. As I discussed a moment ago, there was just a release specification change. The product itself didn't change. But even more importantly, plaintiffs are precluded from arguing that the product changed because we tried to Judge Connolly the question of whether the API infringed before the ANDA amendment. Judge Connolly found no infringement and they haven't appealed it. That issue is now settled.
At the end of the day, what was the legal effect of the amendment on both parties' positions in the litigation?
Well, Judge Connolly considered whether there was infringement before or after and found no infringement during either time period. They haven't even appealed any of the trial rulings. They haven't appealed.
I don't understand what you're saying. There was no decision about their new theory.
Judge Connolly found that their original theory before the ANDA amendment was insufficient to show infringement.
Right.
Yeah.
And that theory became more difficult as a result of the ANDA amendment, right?
No, he considered it separately. He considered the evidence before the ANDA.
I understand. But in fact, it became more difficult as a result of the ANDA amendment, right?
Well, the ultimate infringement question did become more difficult for them. I agree with that. But Judge Connolly looked at all of the theories that they were asserting. They were relying on testing to show that there was infringement. And Judge Connolly said none of that testing showed infringement. And so did it affect the outcome? At the end of the day, it didn't affect the outcome because they would have lost had we not amended the ANDA. And that's not speculation. They're not appealing. They're not appealing any of Judge Connolly's findings.
I wasn't asking about affecting the outcome. I was asking about affecting the positions that the parties were taking during this whole process.
Well, it bolstered our position, if that's what you're asking. I mean, absolutely. Because now we had a release specification that was specifically designed to provide a check after the API product was made.
Why wouldn't Estella then have the opportunity to address this point that made your position more advantageous as a result of the amendment?
They did. They did have the opportunity. That was my point. They had the opportunity to take any discovery they wanted into the ANDA amendment. They got samples. And the ANDA amendment does not specifically speak to the intermediates used by Curia to make the API. And so what they did is they tested the Form F intermediate. They came up with a new opinion that there's infringement in the Form F intermediate even after the ANDA and DMF amendments, and they presented that at trial. They had the right to present that evidence at trial. And so, in a sense, they also got additional evidence to present at trial that they would not have had but for the ANDA amendment.
And I think the point is that the ANDA amendments didn't affect their new theory one way or the other, right?
Correct. Their new theory had nothing to do with the ANDA amendment for the simple reason the ANDA amendment has nothing to do with Hospira's compounding process. Nothing whatsoever to do with it. So it was a brand new theory, and as Judge Burke held, it wasn't based on any new evidence. It wasn't based on anything in the DMF. It wasn't based on anything in the amended ANDA. It was based on knowledge that they had at the beginning of the case that Hospira dissolves Form G in a water-based solution, plus a document, a dissolution document that Hospira produced during discovery. That's what they based their new theory. And their entire argument is that because Hospira amended the ANDA, they get a do-over. They get to come up with a brand new contention that they could have made earlier, didn't, decided not to make, and can radically change the case in terms of new witnesses, new evidence, different types of testing shortly before trial. And that's why Judge Burke, in his wide discretion, said, we can't do this. Hospira, you'd be too prejudiced. The other point I just want to make briefly based on arguments in the brief is they made it sound like this is facially a clean infringement theory. The notion that, of course, if you take Form G, dissolve it in a water-based solution, you're going to get infringement. That is a vast oversimplification and oversimplification.
The issue is not before us. How can we address that?
Okay. I wanted to clarify that, and counsel also did make a reference to the fact that our expert said he could conduct testing in a matter of weeks, but the testing at issue that he was asked about was, can you come up with testing as to the effect of Form G in the presence of water? He said, yeah, you could do something like that in a matter of weeks. That's not the question. The question here is much more complicated. Can you test what happens when you dissolve Form G for the purpose of completely dissolving it as soon as possible? Does it just dissolve, or does it go through what their expert described as a complex conversion process based on esoteric science? And their own expert said the testing to do that is something that takes a long time. It's highly specialized, and it's something called in situ Raman testing.
Okay, I think we're out of time. Thank you, Mr. Klein. Mr. Hughes, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few brief points. First, my friend began with the April 7th, 2021 hearing, but he repeated what was a clip quote in his brief. He quotes at Appendix 1066, where counsel for appellant said, quote, "We don't think these amendments should change our evidence or our position." He leaves out the rest of that sentence, which says, "But we don't want to be blindsided if we don't know the details." And this was all before the amendment went in. And again, at 1064, we complained of unfair moving target and explained that we needed discovery precisely for these purposes. Second, about the relatedness here, our theory has always been that it converts in the presence of water. There's no denying that the ANDA amendment removed water from the place that we are previously focused on. It is not a significant change, and we think well within the reason to show that there is conversion to water in other parts of the process. Third, my friend focused at length on his view that this was not a change to the product or a small change, but this is completely inconsistent with what he told Judge Connolly at trial, which again, quote, "These aren't tiny changes. These are big changes for the precise purpose of addressing the issue that we're talking about in this case," trial transcript 787 to 788. To win before Judge Connolly, they made the representation this completely changed the product. They're now telling this court the exact opposite. That's not credible. Fourth, that we haven't appealed the outcome as to the pre-amendment simply because that's not the product they're going to sell and is not relevant for this court's consideration.
What about the arguments that your friend is making that you had choices and you didn't take or make certain choices that you're now regretting?
Well, Your Honor, that's because they changed the product after the close of discovery. The way this works is they choose the product, we make choices about infringement, that goes to the court. The change-up that happened here was they chose the product, we made our choices about the infringement contentions, then they changed the product. Okay, so that's the critical issue.
They changed the product, according to you, in the end amendments. You could have come in and said, okay, this now affects our old theory, and we think we need a new theory here, and we'd like to present this, but you didn't do that.
Well, you know, I don't think that's right, because what we got at 1220 was a clear order saying we can give supplemental infringement contentions. That was clear as day that we were under the impression we could do exactly what we did. There's, I don't think any...
You didn't raise the new theory, right, until much later.
Your Honor, we raised it in compliance with the schedule. And again, this was in response to their 9-month delay from when we gave our infringement contentions to when they changed the ANDA amendment, which they admit was for the purpose of undoing this. And again, the whole reason why there was a change to theory is because there was a change to the product that they said was a significant, substantial change to undercut infringement. There has to be some measure of balance between the two.
Okay, all right. I think we're out of time. Thank you. Just both counsel, you know, these confidentiality markings in the brief are really not responsive to this court's requirements. You marked water as confidential. You didn't mark it as confidential. Appreciate that you clarified that for the court before the argument, but you should not have had the inconsistent markings in the first place.
Thank you, Your Honor. We were trying to preserve Hospira's information. We went to the effort to try to clarify that.
You're supposed to think about the markings to see if they're consistent. There's no way they're consistent in any event. All right. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted. That concludes our discussion for this morning.